Okay, our next speaker is Cyril Proust, who is also at the Highfield Lab, but at the Toulouse location. So you know the Grenoble Lab has static fields going up to 35 Tesla, and the Toulouse Lab has pulsed fields going up now to 90 Tesla. And so Cyril will tell us about his transport and ultrasound measurements. His title is Impact of Charge Order on the Electronic Properties of Underdoped Cuprates.
Maybe we have to switch the, if I want to be on the screen, on the knife. Good, thanks, Antoine. So let me start by thanking Antoine and Louis for organizing this very nice workshop in Paris, so a city that I like pretty much, and with this very nice audience. So I'm very proud to be here and to present some old and more recent data on Fermi surface reconstruction. So in fact, my talk will be divided in two parts. So the first part I will discuss about quantum oscillation, of course, and our recent result. And at the end, I will present, so I will come back to ultrasound measurements, so already discussed by Marc-Henri, and show you some new and unpublished results. So this work has been done in collaboration with many groups, so it's not only one group in Toulouse that did the work. So in particular, so I would like to acknowledge all of my group in Toulouse, and in particular Francis Laliberté, who is so postdoc with us now and has done a lot of ultrasonic measurement. Wojciech Tabis also, and is more involved in transport measurement. And of course, my two colleagues, David Vignol and Baptiste Vignol. So all these people are in the audience today. So. I would like also to acknowledge my former postdoc, who is now based with a permanent position in Grenoble, so David Leboeuf, who is still very involved and very enthusiastic and motivated with the ultrasonic experiment. So, of course, he's part of all the work that I'm going to show. So the first part of my talk devoted on quantum oscillation has been done in collaboration with a group of Louis Taillefer, so sample coming from the group of Dougbon in UBC. Some mercury sample coming from the Martin Graven group, collaboration also with Anthony Carrington, Nigel Hussey. And I will show you so the recent ultrasonic data on the YBCO coming from the group of Stuttgart. So let me start by a very short introduction on quantum oscillation. And let me remind you that quantum oscillation is a powerful probe for the Fermi surface. Since as soon as you observe oscillation, the frequency of this oscillation is directly related to the extremal area here, perpendicular to the magnetic field. And quantum oscillation so has been observed in now many compounds at different doping levels. And here I show you a summary of the measurement on both sides of the phase diagram. And so let's start on the strongly overdoped side of the phase diagram, this thallium-2201 compound, where you see oscillation with a very high frequency, so 18 kilotesla, which convert within this formula to an orbit which covers 65% of the first brilliant zone. So this is a large orbit, and this is in very good agreement with LDA calculation. Contrary wise, on the underdoped side, so first measurement from 2007, so we have observed a very slow compared to thallium 201, so very slow oscillation, so frequency is about 500 Tesla, and this converts to an orbit which covers only 2% of the first brilliant zone. And this first measurement call already for topological change in the Fermi surface on both sides of the phase diagram. So quantum oscillation in YBCO now has been observed in many probes by many groups in many labs. So there is no doubt that it's here. So I make a list here. And between the two groups in Los Alamos and in Toulouse, it has been observed in a large dobbing range between typically 9% and more recently up to 15% by Brad Ramshaw. But quantum oscillation have been also observed in the single layer mercury 1201 compound. So this compound is free of copper oxygen chain. It has only one copper oxygen chain, so it's a very simple structure. And the quantum oscillation that we observe here has a frequency so slightly higher, but very similar to YBCO, so 800 tesla. So the second important fact is the measurement of Hall effect back again to 2007 in YBCO. And here I show you so the field dependence of the Hall coefficient at different temperatures for one YBCO, under the YBCO sample, and for the mercury 1201 compound. And if I make some cut at fixed magnetic field, and I plot the Hall coefficient versus temperature measured at high field, as you can see, so the Hall coefficient so is positive, as measured earlier, at high temperature, but becomes strongly negative at low temperature and high magnetic field. And the negative Hall coefficient calls for the presence of an electron pocket in the Fermi surface of underdoped cuprate. And the only way to get an electron pocket in the Fermi surface of all dop cuprate is to invoke a reconstruction of the Fermi surface into electron. And I will show you later all pocket below critical doping. Fermi surface reconstruction call for a broken symmetry. And now, so you have heard the nice talk by Marc Horry. So we know what is the broken symmetry of the system that is responsible for this Fermi surface reconstruction. So it has been discovered by NMR, by Marc Horry. So I won't come back to this. And subsequent experiment has been done with X-ray diffraction by many groups. And they indeed have detected 2D charge fluctuation starting at higher temperature with an incommensurate periodicity. So I'm not going to go into details since two next speaker will speak about that. But basically, what is important is that the charge order has been detected between 8% and 16%, so doping range very similar to where quantum oscillation has been detected. And so this is in YBCO. And it has been recently also discovered in the mercury compound with a slightly smaller wave vector, which can explain the slight difference in the frequency of quantum oscillation. Okay, so now the first question that I would like to address is, can we reconcile the quantum oscillation and transport property in YBCO with the Fermi surface reconstructed by a biaxial charge order? A qualitative picture of Fermi surface reconstruction is to start like this. So this model comes from ID from Sushitra Sebastian and Neil Harrison before actually the discovery of charge, so of biaxial charge order by X-ray. And basically, if you start from the underlying LDI calculation and you assume that you have a pseudo gap, you wash out this antinodal region, and then that if you take wave vectors that connect this point of the Fermi arc with the two direction, so you end up with this red pocket, which is actually an electron pocket located at the nodal direction. And the question, so this is really a qualitative picture, the question is, are there other pockets? And the answer is yes. So let me show you the data. So here, so we have done two types of experiments. So the Louis group has performed Seebeck coefficient measurement in Tallahassee up to 45 tesla. And in Toulouse, we have performed transport C-axis transport measurement up to 70 tesla in a sample with similar doping level. And so let's start here by the seabed coefficient. So at a very low temperature, what you see, so it's beautiful oscillation with beating, which in fact indicates that there is not only one frequency. So we still have this main frequency at about 500 Tesla, but there are two satellites on both sides of this main frequency. And I would like to recall that YBCO is a bilayer, has a bilayer structure, so two copper oxygen planes. So you expect with quantum oscillation to at least observe two peaks, but the third peak is still, so the origin of this third peak is still under debate. But when you raise the temperature above 10K or so, so you wash out this, I will call it fast quantum oscillation, so linked to the electron pocket, and you end up with a slowly undulated signal, which is periodic in 1/B. So this is very clear on this graph where I show the derivative of the magnetoresistance versus magnetic field, so measure up to 70 Tesla, so no analysis at different temperatures. So as you can see at 10 Kelvin, you still see this fast oscillation, which are exactly the same frequency than this one, but you see that this fast oscillation is on the top of this slowly oscillating background, which in fact is a slow quantum oscillation. And the frequency of this quantum oscillation is about 100 Tesla. So in Toulouse, we were able to do temperature dependence of the amplitude of the oscillation, which allow us to deduce the effective mass. And we get an effective mass of about 0.5 times the free electron mass. So this explains why we can see this slow oscillation up to a pretty high temperature. We also perform an angular dependence of this slow oscillation, and we see that the frequency behave more or less like 1/cos θ. So this is this red line là. So the departure of this, so the 1/cos θ law come from the fact that you tilt so the magnetic field in respect to so the axis of your cylinder. So you expect a true 1/cos θ for a true 2D cylinder, and the departure of this load just indicates you that you have warping of the Fermi surface. But to summarize, what is important is that this slow oscillation, which bears all the signature of quantum oscillation, and we attribute it to a new pocket. So at the same time of our measurements, so the group of Soubir did some calculation, Fermi surface reconstruction with biaxial charge density wave, using the wave vector measured by X-ray. And of course, so he finds this electron pocket here, which has a frequency, as you can see, this is the doping dependence of their result. Of their calculation compared to the measurement that we have done so far so in Toulouse, and the agreement is pretty good. So it takes here into account, of course, the doping dependence of the wave vector measured by X-ray. But in addition to this electron pocket, he also finds two hole pockets here where the ratio of the frequency is about 5, so in a pretty good agreement with what we found in our measurement. And so here I resketch the Fourier transform with this electron, the electron pocket here and the hole pocket here. But what I would like to stress is that, as you can see, so there are still spectral rates here at the antinode. And to get a Fermi surface made of only one electron and two hole pockets, you really need to invoke the pseudo gap as the underlying Fermi surface that is further reconstructed by the charge density waves. So let me now convince you that this hole pocket in the Fermi surface so agree with the transport measurements that reconcile many facts coming from transport measurement. So the first thing that I would like to discuss is seabed coefficient. So this is measurement done in 2011 by the group of Louis. And here what you see is seabed coefficient versus temperature measured at high field at different doping levels. And I will be interested to the extrapolation of this Seebeck coefficient at zero temperature. And in a Fermi liquid scenario, so this Seebeck coefficient is just inversely proportional to the Fermi temperature. That is to say, to the ratio of the effective mass to the frequency of the oscillation. So all these parameters we have measured now with we have all this, the doping dependence of this measurement from quantum oscillation. So here in red, I show you so the extrapolation at zero temperature. So this is the red point. And the line here is just what you expect given the doping dependence of the frequency, which slightly increases with doping, and the doping dependence of the effective mass, which increase strongly increase when approaching 8%. And you expect to have a Seebeck coefficient with, which makes something like that, which is not in agreement with the measurement, except at 11%. But if you now invoke a two-band model, so a whole pocket, and if you take so the parameters that we find from our quantum oscillation, so now you can reproduce so the data, the doping dependence of the Seebeck coefficient with a free parameter, which is the ratio of the conductivity of the electron and hole pocket. But the take-home message is really that you need a two-band model to explain the doping dependence of Seebeck coefficient. So let me now discuss what we call the thermodynamic police, the gamma coefficient of the specific heat, which is a constant multiplied by the effective mass modulo the number of pockets. So if you at zero temperature, so if you know all the number of pockets and the effective mass of your carrier, and if you know the gamma parameter, so you should be able to compare these two results. So given what we have measured so far, so we find a gamma which is around 7.6 plus minus 1, so millijoule per mole per Kelvin square for one electron plus two whole pockets plus the bilayer of YBCO. And there are now two measurements of the electric, so of the electronic coefficient of the specific heat, so the one by the group of Bobinger, which find a gamma electronic of about 5, with plus minus 1 millijoule per mole per Kelvin square. But there is a very recent measurement, so still unpublished result, but it will come soon, by the group of Christophe Marsema and Thierry Klein in Grenoble, where they have reperformed the measurement so at the LNCMI Grenoble in a YBCO 11%. And they found an electronic term, so close, but slightly higher, of the order of 7 plus minus 1.5 millijoule per Kelvin per mole minus 1. So this number agree very well to what we deduce from quantum oscillation. So finally, I would like to present briefly, because time is running out very fast, some analysis that we did very recently with Nigel Hussey. So we came back to some data measured in the cousin compound of YBCO, so the 248 compound. And we did using so some extrapolation of the magnetoresistance. So we were interested in the A coefficient of the T square term of the resistivity. So here I show you magnetoresistance versus magnetic field at different temperatures. So we use this two-band model to feed the data at zero magnetic field. And here I'm now plotting so the resistivity versus temperature with this extrapolation at zero magnetic field. And as you can see, so the red dashed line is a T-square fit of the data. So we have performed this analysis for, in fact, three samples, and both samples show consistent so T-square term at low temperature with the A coefficient, which is of the order of 8 plus minus 2 nanohm centimeter per Kelvin square. And if we want to now put some quantitative estimate of this A coefficient, so we are using so the Kadowa-Keywoods formula and from this paper from Nigel. And the A coefficient is simply proportional to the square of the effective mass and the cube of the Fermi wave vector. And again, from quantum oscillation, we have all these numbers. So for 248 sample, if we put the number into this formula, we find the A coefficient of the order of 100 nanohm centimeter per Kelvin square, an order of magnitude higher to what we find. But if we now assume that the Fermi surface contains a Hall pocket and that you have two parallel waves, so you have to sum the conductivity, two parallel waves for the conductivity, you end up for one electron and two Hall pocket to a number which is 14 nanohm centimeter per cubic square. So it's not in very good agreement, but we took first, so this formula is maybe too simple to account for a true value of the A coefficient, a very precise value. And second, so we take for the Hall pocket, so the value measured in the 1 to 3 sample. But again, the take-home message is to, in order to explain the magnitude of the A coefficient, you have to invoke a Fermi surface made of multiple pockets. Okay, so I still have 6 minutes. And let me now briefly talk about ultrasound and ask the question, where does the thermodynamic phase transition to charge order take place? So I would like to recall that sound velocity is a thermodynamic quantity. So you are measuring basically sound velocity, which is proportional to this elastic constant. And elastic constant is second derivative of the free energy with respect to the strain. And it's a directional probe that you can play with propagation and polarization of your sound wave. And as already shown by Marc-Henri, so we have been able so to map so this Venn diagram. So basically here you see one trace of the C11 longitudinal mode at 30K, where you see two anomalies. The first one is attributed to the vortex liquid and follows this well-known shape. And the second one, by comparison with NMR, so we attributed to transition to charge order. And from simple group theory arguments, so we were able to say that the charge modulation has to go both along A and B direction. So here I would like to present some new recent data, so obtained, as I said at the beginning, in sample coming from Stuttgart group. So the data are in very, very good agreement to what we found before. So here I again show some field sweep at fixed temperature. So this is the transverse mode, C66, for an ortho-2 sample, with a TC within 1 Kelvin, very similar to what we measured before. And here, from C66 versus magnetic field at different temperatures. And clearly, from this curve, you can see a sharp phase transition, which is the threshold field is relatively so constant up to, say, 30-40 Kelvin. And then this threshold field so go to higher field. So this mimic very well what we found before. And so as already pointed out by Mark before, so if you compare this threshold field with the one show measured by NMR, so there is a slight difference. So here I show previous data obtained in our paper in 2013. And so this is the new data coming from this sample. So there is a slight, very small difference in the threshold field between these two samples. But since the TC are slightly different and there is a slight doping dependence of this threshold field, so I believe that this is due to the small difference in TC of the sample. Okay. And here, now I would like to compare our ultrasonic measurement with the measurement of Christophe Marcenin and Thierry Klein. So this is the same graph than before, C66 for the two samples measured so far. And so this is the variation of specific heat versus magnetic field measured at 10 Kelvin. So in an ortho-2 sample with a TC of 62K using a modulation technique. And as you can see, so specific heat so is almost linear in field up to, 16 Tesla. And there is a clear cusp, and it becomes flat. And this cusp corresponds very well to where we see the onset of the rays of C66 within field. And I believe that this field corresponds to where charge order takes place. So it's another thermodynamic signature of the of the phase transition towards charge order, so in-field phase transition towards charge order. Okay, and to finish, so I would like now to show you some new results, so obtained with Francis Laliberté and David Leboeuf. I think that they are pretty important because up to now, so I show you and we did only field sweep at fixed temperature. And of course, so it was a question, I had the question very often, what happened if you do a temperature sweep at high field, so if you cross the phase diagram like this. And we finally succeeded to do this measurement. And here I show you a result obtained in C11 elastic constant. Let's first focus, so this is relative sound velocity versus temperature. The black curve is the curve measured at zero magnetic field. And here you can see a clear anomaly at the superconducting transition. So of course it's on the strong background, but it's clearly a big anomaly for ultrasonic measurement. And as soon as you put a magnetic field above 15 Tesla, because below 15 Tesla, basically you see nothing, but above 15 Tesla, here I show two curves at 25 and 32 Tesla, and you can clearly see, so again, a clear anomaly at the transition where we expect to see the CDW. And to convince you, so I remove from the data so a very smooth background to show you the anomaly versus temperature at zero magnetic field. So this anomaly corresponds exactly where of the TC of the sample. And for the two curves at 25 and 32 Tesla, so you can see that the two anomalies within the error bar are about 50K, where we expect to see the transition toward charge order. And so this is another confirmation that we see so phase transition in-field phase transition toward charge order with ultrasonic measurement. So to conclude, so I would like just to say that show you that there is a Fermi surface reconstruction by biaxial charge order, which give rise to electron and hole pocket, that we can now reconcile the quantum oscillation and transport property with the X-ray result if we take into account, of course, the pseudo gap on the underlying Fermi surface. And I show you so ultrasonic measurement that detect a phase transition at low temperature above threshold field, both in the field and temperature dependence of the sound velocity. And I guess that so this question will be raised later during the discussion session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cyril.